That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And for the next hour or so, we have one very specific objective: to get you better with money than you are right now. Sounds like a pretty great promise to me. So, how are we going to do that today? Well, we've got a few different ideas. I mean, I've got to try some things with you, right? Because not everything is going to stick. Of course, we like to take a look at what is going on in the news, what's happening right now, specifically that relates to the money in your pocket. So we don't just look at everything in the economy, because I'm not going to lie, most of it's boring. And if I had to read all of that stuff every single week just for you guys, I don't think any of you would want to carry on listening. So let's get to the relevant stuff and let's do it fast. And then we like to bring in some of the most interesting and unique, let's say, range of experts, famous faces and guests to share their own personal finance knowledge and experiences. And specifically coming up this week, we've got Janet Napton, the Director of Lateral Accounting, to discuss the thing that's happening on the 31st of January this year. Well, it actually happens on the 31st of January every year, and that is the self-assessment tax return deadline. And then after that, Mitch Young, who you might know as at Mitch the Tax Man. He's an award-winning tax advisor and director of Fusion Consulting Group, to talk about all things inheritance, because the rules are changing. Thank you to the Labour government for that. You're going to find out what those changes are if you stick around for the whole show. So, shall we kick off with the news then? I think that's a pretty good place to start. And unless you've been living under a rock here in the UK, you are probably looking outside your window right now and seeing that the weather is a little bit crap. Well, it's even worse for some people up north with Storm Herminia. So, big storms happen all the time in the UK. I say all the time, but most winters in the UK, we get hit by something awful in some specific part. And the question I want to ask you right now are, if your business, your job, your home, your roads around you are severely affected by weather, what are your rights? Like, financially, what are your rights? How can you cover yourself in terms of your house, your travel, your work? And what are the rules around it? Can you get any money from the government to help you sort things out? Do you need to have insurance? And just generally, what should you know to protect yourself and be okay, let's say, on the other side of these horrible natural disasters? So, got some fun stuff for you here today. Some people in the worst affected areas literally have their power shut off. Now, as a little, well, I was going to call myself like a little London boy, and I don't know why I was going to put myself down so much. But as a Londoner, I've never experienced this so badly myself. I'm sure there's been bad storms in London in the past, but I just can't remember any. But in cases of severe weather, sometimes electricity gets shut down. I don't know why I had to contextualize that so much, but you guys get the picture. And in the UK, you can get compensated for such occurrences. So let's say your electricity, your power gets shut off for a long amount of time due to severe weather. You should or could be owed £70. Now, that's a £70 payment. Now, you're questioning yourself, how am I going to get this money, etc., etc.? You should be contacted by your local electricity distributor or through the Energy Ombudsman. The word ombudsman has always fascinated me, but let's maybe save that for another show altogether. But the Energy Ombudsman should keep you updated as to whether or not you get allocated that £70. Now, you're going to ask me, is that just like once? Is that every single day? They leave it a little bit vague, I'm not going to lie. So what tends to happen is, if you are severely affected for a long amount of time, that £70 payment might come through again, and then again, and then again. And of course, that's just to help you just, I suppose, manage the situation that you're currently in. Now, moving away from this compensation, which I think I've confused you with, what's going on if you have a job and you can't get to your job because of your work, because of a certain storm? Do you have to go to work? Will you even get paid? What is the answer to all of these questions? Well, the first thing to make sure is, if you cannot get to work, make sure you tell your job as soon as possible. Pick up the phone, call them, text them as early as you can. Number two is, if you can have any flexibility, because I know a lot of us work from home these days. I know that I definitely do, at least 2 or 3 days a week. Ask for flexibility. So let's say you are in a job that requires you to be in the office 4 days a week, and you've already used up your day from home. I'm sure they will allow you to be flexible and work from home another day. I can't promise anything, but if you don't ask, you don't get. But the main thing, I think the overall picture that you have to be aware of is if you can work, so if you are fully able to work, but your workplace has had to shut down because of the storm, you should be entitled to normal pay because you are available for work, but work can't facilitate you. If you're on, obviously, zero contact hours is a completely different story. But aside from that, if you are an employee and you have, you know, a contract in any way, shape or form, you should be paid under a normal schedule. Number two, travel. Trains in particular in the UK get severely affected by wind, let alone storms. So you should be getting refunds for cancelled trains, and that is if they get cancelled. Or if you don't feel safe to travel, you should also be able to put in a request to have that train refunded. And if there are delays on trains, you should get automatic compensation. But, and this is a big but, you have to claim for it. So you get automatic compensation that you have to still claim for, okay? Go through your ticket provider or whatever other format you've used to purchase your seat on that train and get that compensation. Driving. One of the key questions with storms is, if I drive during a storm, is my insurance valid? 99% of the time, yes, unless you have provided, or unless they can provide evidence that you have been reckless or negligent with the way that you are driving. Flights. If you are traveling, flights have been cancelled because of a storm. Now, I know one of my favorite travel hacks, well, it's not really a travel hack, but a thing to know about travel is about the huge compensation available. If a flight or an airline isn't able to kind of fulfill their promise to you and get you to a country on a specific time frame, in the case of weather, because it is out of the airline's control, you do not get compensation, I'm afraid. I know, I'm sorry to let you guys all down, because the compensation can be quite juicy. Let me tell you that, when they are at fault and it is under their control. But you should get a refund, or an alternative route should be sorted for you, just to be made aware. If you're in the airport, by the way, and your flight is delayed 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours because of bad weather, but it's still hoping to go ahead, the airline should look after you in terms of meals. If you have to sleep somewhere overnight, they should get you to a hotel, transport you there, transport you back to the airport the next day. Just good things to know. Homes, of course, insurance is going to be necessary. Buildings, content, stock, premise, obviously, if you are a person versus whether you are a business, this is all dependent on the kind of insurance that you need. You should always look into things like business interruption cover. So if you can't conduct your business, you get insured for that as well. Motor insurance, if your car gets absolutely ruined by a storm, most motor insurances do cover this. And make sure that you contact your insurer as soon as possible if a problem happens. And one final question that some people do ask is, can you even get home insurance or any kind of insurance if you are buying a property in a flood risk zone? And the answer to that is yes. There are schemes to ensure that ensure that every house is insurable in some way, shape or form, regardless of where it is. So don't worry, don't be concerned. It might change the cost of your insurance, but you should still be able to get insurance. Next up, if you run a business and you've been struggling for a few years, do you think this is it? Do you think 2025 is the year that you finally shut up shop? I don't know. Do you run a small cafe on a local high street? Have you set up an e-commerce business on the internet at the age of 13 that was doing well for a few years but is now not inspiring you so much? And the reason that I'm asking that is because there's been a record jump in the number of UK businesses in critical financial distress, according to insolvency specialists. How many, I hear you ask? Well, in September, there were 31,201. In December, we are up a massive 50% to 46,583. And those are the businesses who are in a critical financial distress. Now, if you're asking me how many are in significant financial distress, that is 3.5% of all businesses, which translates to 654,765. That is an absolutely crazy, crazy number. And I think we're just seeing the toll of year after year of difficulty for businesses. So let's go back to 2020 to 2022. You got COVID, especially if you were a local high street business. That was probably really, really difficult for you. And you might have just about got to the other side of that. And then you got into the cost of living crisis, where people might have struggled to purchase whatever you were selling. You might have seen less footfall. Or maybe your suppliers were putting up costs extremely and it's just making things harder for you. Your energy bills were going up. So you got pounded with that from 2022 to 2024. And now in 2025, what's going on? Well, We've got two things in particular. Number one, growth seems to be at an all-time low, which means people are not spending as much money. I don't know why. Are people more savvy at the moment? Are they just fearing for the worst again in 2025? Because we had a past few, like the past half decade has been pretty tough. Or is it because of the changes happening? And I repeat this on so many shows over the past few weeks about the changes happening to taxes and costs of running a business come this April. And those two, again, I'll repeat them, is national minimum wage is going up quite significantly, so you're going to have to start paying your employees even more money. And national insurance for employers is going up from 13.8% to 15%, as well as the threshold going down from £9,100 to £5,000. More national insurance requiring to be paid, more costly to run a business, profit margins down. And is this the straw that breaks the camel's back? It's starting to seem that way. I mean, one quote that I've got here says that the industry as a whole is horrific. And some of these challenges, I don't think any government really understands, particularly around VAT rates that we pay. The costs just keep going up and up, supply costs, energy costs. I think we're really seeing this massive watershed moment, a 50% increase in business in critical financial distress over the past 3 months. That is crazy. And I think 2025 is just going to be this year where we just see a lot of businesses go under. And I do want to hear, so if you are a business out there that is struggling, is thinking that this potentially is the year that you want to shut up shop, we would love to hear from you. What's going on? What are the problems you're facing financially in particular? Obviously, this is that money show. We want to hear about the money things from you. So if there are things that you can share with us, your specific case studies, your experiences, what's happening, we would love to hear from you. So DM us at That Money Show and we can hopefully try and share your story and try and help each other through the world of radio and social media. And finally, how often have you gone on Google, looked somewhere up, and the reviews just seem a little bit too good to be true? Well, quite often they are too good to be true because Google has officially agreed to make significant changes to its processes to help tackle fake reviews of UK businesses, the regulator has announced. So when you go on to Google, you can either see companies that might have paid for all of these fake reviews, or you just see a lot of people that have put fake reviews spamming a company negatively. So you can have both sides of the coin. It can be positive and negative. And just in case you guys think that I'm making this up, there have been two stories in particular. One about how medical clinics are using fake Google reviews. They are buying fake Google reviews to boost their profiles online from a BBC investigation. Imagine that. Like, you're looking to do something that will actually affect your medical health. And the reason why you pick a specific location is because of a place that has fake Google reviews about its processes. That is scary. That is really scary. And yes, Google do need to do more. Or how about this one? A small chain of independent restaurants is being blackmailed by criminals who have said unless they are paid thousands of pounds, they will flood the restaurant's online listings with fake one-star reviews. So for those of you that think that Google reviews are fully irrelevant, they ain't. They work both positively and negatively, and I am backing this move by Google to work with the regulators to make significant changes and stop these bad reviews. I want to know if the restaurant I'm going to is actually nice. I want to know from real people. Although, I don't really write reviews. Do any of you write? Let us know if you write reviews. I'd be really interested to hear if you are a review, what's it called? An official review writer on all of the places you go to, and I would love to know why. Stick around, guys, because coming up straight after this, I'm going to be joined by Janet Napton, the Director of Accounting, to discuss the self-assessment tax return deadline happening on Friday.
FUPAR Radio. Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yeah. The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes. We could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with. And keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the truth. And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SAS sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously they can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, and joining me now on the show is Janet Napton, the Director of Lateral Accounting. Janet, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and there is one thing and one thing only on my mind this week, and that is the self-assessment deadline. I don't know whether I should be scared or excited. Can you answer that one for me?
I don't know. It depends if you're going to file it on time.
That is a good question. I think I filed it already. So let's go with excited. I am one of those people that like to get in nice and early. I do not want to mess around with deadlines. In every other area of my life, I'm late with things. With this one, me and HMRC are going to stay very good friends. That is the only thing that my my accountant advised me on. But could you explain to the average person who might not have heard of the term self-assessment before, what is this tax return deadline and what happens if you miss it?
I mean, your tax year end is 5th of April. So between the 5th of April and the 31st of January, you can file your tax return. If you are earning over the personal allowance and you have untaxed income, so anything that's not employment income, you need to file a tax return. I don't know why people leave until the last minute, to be honest. If you file even an hour after the deadline on the 31st, you'll have a penalty. So you'll be paying a £100 fine straight away.
And that is £100 that most people can't afford.
You've got so many months before then to file.
Yeah, so we need to stress, like you mentioned, you have from pretty much April at the end of the tax year, you got May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, January. 9 months, more or less, 9.5 months even, to sort this out. But the majority of people do seem to be panicking around this type of year and throwing it in late. So are there reasons why this happens, and are there ways that people can be better prepared so that 2025-26, they are no longer sorting things out in January?
People love to procrastinate, especially when it comes to admin. And I think lots of people think it's more complicated than it is. So my first advice for anyone that's self-employed is make sure everything, your income and your expenses, goes through a separate bank account. So when it comes to needing to file, you know everything is there. You can just download all your bank statements from the 6th of April 23, for example, to the 5th of April 24. Download it and then go through it line by line, because you know everything relates to your business, so that's easy. I have lots of clients who use their personal for business as well, so it's going through like, oh, did I use Uber for business or was it for personal? So if everything is business, you know that is easy. I mean, my clients, I just have a template where I send them every every tax year, and it's got codes like number one is food, number two is travel, three is office expenses, on and on. So it's really not hard. I think people think it's harder than it is, which I understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have a system in place and everything's sitting in one place and you know what you can claim, it should be quite simple.
I get what you mean by people probably think it's harder than it is, because it's money. It's the world of money. It's the thing we were never taught about.
You're in denial because a lot of people are worried. So my biggest advice as well is to just get it done as soon as possible, because there's nothing worse than telling my clients at the last minute that they owe a lot of tax.
So what is the, you mentioned the £100 immediate fine, even if you're an hour late for filing your self-assessment. Yeah. How much worse does it get if you're, you know, a few weeks late, years?
They start accruing interest on what you owe, and then every month the penalty gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
God, so things to avoid.
And it's money that you could have rather just used to pay an accountant and got it done on the 6th of April, you know, than wanting to do it yourself maybe, or procrastinating to the last minute. It's just throwing money away.
Are there any valid reasons to not file it the minute that you can at the end of the tax year and wait until sometime like December and January? I suppose some companies maybe refer to cash flow and things like that, so they would rather utilize that.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to pay your tax right away.
Mm.
It would just be a matter of you knowing how much tax you owe and putting it into a savings account. You know, so that money is sitting safely, and you can still amend your return up until the 31st of January the following year. So if you file early and then you realize, oh no, I missed out on an expense or something, you can still refile.
Got it.
You know what I mean? So
you can make the changes.
I just
feel,
you know, lots of people who are self-employed, and I've been there before, where you work so hard and make money, but you feel like you can't spend it because you don't know at the end of the day what's yours and what's the tax man's. So it is really useful, you know, and at the just as the tax year ends, or even, you know, in between the tax year, just getting your spreadsheet up to date, having an idea of what your net income is, and calculating, you know, an estimate of what tax you owe. Then you can set what tax you owe aside and pay yourself the rest.
So here's the dreaded question. A lot of people file their own self-assessments. Like you said, it's not too complicated. It is something that you can do. You don't have to be a trained professional. What happens if you get it wrong?
I mean, if you get it wrong and it's not not malicious intent to evade tax, you're not doing it as a tax avoidance. You're just made a human error. If you go to HMRC and you say, I made an error, I will fix it, the penalties or the repercussions of that will probably be nothing or not big at all. It's if you do it knowingly, then an HMRC find out, or you let them know later on. Then I wouldn't want to
mess around with that.
Bad side.
No.
But, you know, lots of people make mistakes.
Absolutely.
I don't think HMRC would ever penalise anybody if they make an honest mistake.
Are there any common pitfalls that you see freelancers or small business owners, people that do it on their own, tend to miss out or actually make as a mistake? So some of the most common ones that, you know, we can highlight here right now so that no one ever makes them ever again.
Well, first of all, not knowing what expenses you can claim. You know, if depending on your business, I have lots of performers. So the expenses you can claim as a performer would be totally different as if you are a contractor, for example. So just understanding exactly what expenses you can claim, making sure you're claiming everything, making sure, as I said, if everything's sitting in a business bank account, you don't forget. Lots of guys, you know, I can imagine you're using your personal accounts and you don't realize that was actually business because it was so many months ago and you can't remember. So I think people are paying unnecessary tax, definitely, and not knowing what they can claim.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, and then one thing I notice a lot of the time, especially for guys who are paying, their taxable income is over 50,000, and they have, you know, self-employment income, and they have PAYE income. If any pensions are deducted from their net salary, they're missing out on that tax benefit. Because you automatically get 20% tax benefit on a pension,
yes,
no matter how much you earn. But if you are a higher taxpayer, you need to file a tax return to get that extra 20%, because now you're paying at 40%.
Okay.
So many people, even if you're just a PAYE earner and you earn over 50,000, guys aren't using that relief.
So just to clarify on that one, because I think that that's a huge problem that most people are just missing out on due to just lack of education. If you are a higher rate taxpayer, so that means you're earning over £50,270 a year, and you contribute any money through your PAYE, through your employer, to your pension.
As a net deduction, not a salary sacrifice. So your money is coming off your gross, which lots of companies are doing these days, but there are also lots of companies that they're taking it off where your NI and your PAYE come off, and then there's like a line item that says nest or pension or, I've definitely found a lot of people not knowing.
You go to HMRC and you basically file a self-assessment and you get that money paid back to you.
Yeah.
That's probably quite a lot of money out there that has just never been reclaimed through HMRC, and they're just sitting there on these piles of cash ready to pay people back for the money that they owe.
Yeah.
And no one ever asks for it.
Yeah.
That's scary. That is really like kind of worrying, especially in the state where we're in a, you know, a cost of living crisis. Every penny counts really in this situation. That is something that people need to know. And that money that's claimed back, does that have to go towards pensions?
No, that's yours.
That's yours. So even though it's coming through the whole pension scheme, you are able to then choose what to do with that reclaimed money through HMRC.
That's your benefit.
Okay, brilliant.
It's a pension relief that you get to claim. And also if you self-employed and you're putting towards a pension personally rather than through payroll, you also claim that as a relief.
Okay, listen up, people. If you are contributing towards your pension, make sure you know the ifs and the buts, because these are important things. When I say mistakes, sometimes people think about overpaying HMRC and doing things the wrong way, or, you know, even underpaying HMRC. But it's all about making sure that you are paying the right amount in the smartest way possible.
Because everyone has to pay tax, and I totally believe in that. But it's knowing that you aren't paying unnecessary tax, because working for yourself is really hard.
Can confirm.
Sometimes feel like none of the money is yours. So knowing and having that peace of mind that what you're paying is correct, it makes a huge difference. And saving along the way and making sure, because if it's all saved in a bank account anyway, it doesn't hurt so much. It still hurts.
It hurts to pay it, but you know it.
You transfer.
You know from the start where it's going, and that's I suppose the key part. Taking a look at the self-assessment process between freelancers, self-employed people versus employees, like you mentioned, there are some situations where employees still have to do a self-assessment. I know you mentioned the pension one, but there's also if they're earning, you know, if they're an additional rate taxpayer and they're looking to claim back through that way or declare that kind of method. What are kind of the key process differences between those two groups of people, employees, employed and self-employed?
Well, they would get all the information from their P60 or their payslip. So your pension is normally not on your P60. It's normally shown on your payslip. So making sure that you always are given your March payslip, or if you left halfway through the year, or you're using your final payslip. You know, and lots of guys... You need to file if you earn over the 150,000, or if you have rental property. So again, making sure that's taken into account, and also making sure your tax code takes that into account, because lots of times when I'm doing clients' tax self-assessments, they end up having to pay a lot of money without realizing, because their tax code is not deducting enough tax.
So they have additional tax requirements.
Yeah, you think if you're mainly self-employed that you're not going to have to pay a lot of tax, but...
That ain't true, and I can confirm it here live on the show. You still have to pay quite a lot of tax. Are there any interesting expenses that you've come across that people are able to claim back through a tax return? And I'm not talking about being cheeky or anything like that, but things that are quite unique or obvious even that people should be claiming back on but just never seem to think of.
I mean, mileage is one of them. If you use your personal car for business work, you know, just keeping track of miles, because I know it doesn't feel like a lot if it's just 45p a mile, but, you know, it adds up. Your use of home, your flat rate use of home, or if you have a home office, you can allocate a percentage of those costs if you're self-employed, like your council tax and things like that. And again, just if you buy a laptop or something and you're not keeping track of those costs, lots of clients just don't include it.
And these are expensive stuff.
And that makes a difference.
Absolutely. Okay, so one final question. Someone has listened to this. They now know their deadline is looming and they need to, you know, shift themselves into third or fourth or even fifth gear probably at this point. Where can freelancers, businesses, owners go right now to kind of find the information and support they need to sort out their self-assessment?
What, like the use of an accountant or looking online or...
Any professional recommendations from you right now? Let's say they're sitting here, they're like, I haven't thought about this and I've got 4 days. What's probably the first place they should go resource-wise?
I started looking at, you know, your income. Figure out where everything's come from. If you've got separate bank accounts or if you've been keeping everything in receipts in a box, I don't know. but just starting somewhere. Creating a spreadsheet and just starting, putting things down. If you're not sure how many, lots of, you know, self-employed, they might have various different PAYE jobs. If you log into your online account, you'll be able to see what PAYE jobs you've had, what income you've paid and what tax has been deducted from that. And also including your NI. If you're self-employed and you're deducting NI, and you pay payroll, you need to take into account what NI you've had paid through your salary as well. There's a section for that. And it's just trying to educate yourself on what can be deducted.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, and even if you use an accountant once.
It's a good place to start.
Some people don't need an accountant, that's absolutely fine, but it's just knowing what you can deduct and just having a spreadsheet or something where you can keep, you know, recording everything.
And then I guess whatever practices you use this year, start them early for next year. Janet, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we've saved a few people quite a few moments of stress for the next 4 days. Thank you so much for coming on That Money Show.
No worries.
Well, there you go. That was Janet telling you everything you need to know about a self-assessment. And that leads me perfectly on to my money tip of the week, which is where I like to give you something short and practical. And what I'm going to do today, I want you to listen in and just identify with any of these bullet points. And if you do, you probably are required to do a self-assessment before the 31st of January. And I would tell you to hurry up and go and do it. Number one, you are self-employed. That should be obvious. Number two, you are a partner in a business. Number three, you have a property income exceeding certain limits. Obviously, go online to figure out what those limits are. Number four, you want to claim tax relief on employment expenses over £2,500 a year. Number five, you have capital gains tax to pay, which hasn't already been paid this year. Next, I don't know what number I'm on, you are a minister of religion, any faith or denomination. Next, you receive income from a trust or estate of a deceased person and further tax is due. Next, you receive foreign income. Following on, you need to make a claim for relief under a double tax agreement or a claim for the remittance basis. Next, you are a non-UK resident and you have a taxable income in the UK. You have income from UK savings and investments of £10,000 or more. You have income from UK dividends of £10,000 or more. You have any other untaxed income of £2,500 or more. You have total taxable income of £150,000 or more before tax. And lastly, you need to pay the high income child benefit charge. Deep breath out. If you identify as any of those, please go and pay your self-assessment before the 31st of January this year and every year pretty much. And up next, I'm going to be joined by Mitch Young, award-winning tax advisor and director of Fusion Consulting Group, to discuss all things inheritance.
FUBAR Radio. Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, "John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets?" I went back to the bloke, said, "Yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do." What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the truth. And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my Yes I Yes sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either, because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, "What the fuck are those?" And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show, live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And joining me now is Mitch Young. You might know him as @Mitch the Tax Man. He's an award-winning tax advisor and the director of Fusion Consulting Group. Mitch, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing today?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Very excited to dive into this one. I can tell you, we've just had a chat about self-assessment, so I'm going to let you off on that one, because I feel like that's probably the only thing that's going through your head right now, or that's been pounded at you over the past few weeks. And instead, I would love to discuss the topic of inheritance, actually, if you're down for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Very important subject. So, happy to chat.
Amazing. Let's give it a crack, because I know there are some changes happening to inheritance, what falls within inheritance, what doesn't fall within inheritance. But I think overall, the concepts, the rules that apply, people are just generally confused. They're not quite sure how it works. It's like, what do you mean that not everything goes to me, you know, on hopefully in many, many decades to come, the passing of a family member? But can you explain, let's start with the basics of how inheritance tax works in the UK, and who is actually liable to pay that money?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, inheritance tax is a tax on someone's estate when they die. This could include property, money, their possessions. And the tax rate is charged at 40%, which is a very high tax, on the remaining proportion, which exceeds their tax-free allowance of £325,000. Not everyone essentially has to pay inheritance tax. So, for instance, if it goes to a spouse or civil partner or maybe a charity, then it could be exempt.
Very interesting. So I think you've made key point number one, which is that it's the total estate's value. And then key point number two is it has to be above a certain threshold. Now, one question that I get the whole time is, let's say it's a parent passing on money to two children. Is that threshold combined or individual to each child?
Yeah, so essentially it's a combined, depending if the from one spouse to another spouse, when if they haven't used a full allowance. So particularly when it comes to if the parents have passed away and then the estate with the children, they essentially have £650,000 to potentially use. When it comes to the main asset for a family, it's typically the parents' main residence. So in that situation, potentially the available nil rate band of that combined £650,000 could essentially be topped up by £175,000 per person. So essentially, for, say, the parents' main residence being passed on to the children, you could actually end up with an allowance, a tax-free allowance of £1 million.
Wow, that's quite the play there. So I'm going to try and summarise that back to you as a little bit of a test for myself. And you try and catch me out if I get anything wrong. So one parent passing on to children, overall, they are able to give tax-free up to £325,000 before tax has to stop you paying on that estate. If two parents are passing on to children, you get to use both of their allowances, coming up to £650,000 before any tax is paid by whoever that estate is being passed on to. And finally, if there is a property that they lived in as part of the estate that's being passed down, and again, that's from two parents, that goes from £650,000 up to £1 million that can be passed down as total estate tax-free before inheritance tax starts to be paid. Am I right there? Am I officially qualified?
If you want a job, let me know. I guess the only caveat to mention is that there is a limit in terms of when the taxable estate. So if the estate actually gets valued in total above 2 million, then essentially that nil rate band starts to get distinguished or evaporated by £1 for every £2 over that threshold. So if you have a very large property, a very expensive property, then potentially you may not have the availability of that nil rate band.
Got it. You're giving me deja vu of the personal tax allowance where you earn over £100,000 and start to lose that, and then you fall into this 60% tax bracket. But maybe we'll save that for another show altogether, because that isn't a conversation in and of itself. So are there any other assets that are exempt from inheritance tax as part of this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a topical question, I guess, given the changes or proposed changes which Rachel Reeves may do. But pensions has been, you know, the big asset where, you know, families have built up and invested. And essentially that asset, which is very large on most cases, can be passed down to the next generations tax free. Now, it's proposed by Rachel Reeves and the Labour government that actually may be bought into inheritance tax. Law hasn't been enacted on that yet, but essentially it's one to look out for.
Got it. So the pension used to be outside of this entire estate. This potential law is bringing it into the estate, so no more pensions being passed down, inheritance tax-free, obviously threshold depending. When is this law potentially going to come into play? If it does, when do we need to keep an eye out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got obviously the budget, the sort of March statement coming out. So we'll see if it does come in. It's likely to come in around April 2027. My gut feeling is that she may taper that down a bit, but let's see.
Got it. I would, however, probably say it's not worth passing away between now and 2027, just to avoid that. sticky conversation, and maybe one we shouldn't avoid right now.
It's like, sorry to interrupt, it's like when clients ask me, oh, yes, so shall we get married for tax reasons?
Some things a tax advisor maybe not best to recommend you on those kind of scenarios. What are kind of some of the most common mistakes you see when it comes to inheritance tax planning, and how can they be easily avoided?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one and the obvious one is a lack of planning. A lot of families come to me when either the father, mother, grandparent has passed away and it's been left to the children to pick up. And often it's very messy. There's large amounts of inheritance tax to pay. So inheritance tax is one of those taxes that you can mitigate with sensible planning. So I think the biggest one across the whole industry is by not doing any planning. That is crucial. And then, of course, in order to avoid them, it's about getting sensible advice. One of the key areas around tax planning in and around inheritance tax is around gifting. So the trick is to actually document records of all your gifts, even if it is just a small amount within the tax allowance. It's good practice to actually keep a record on your file, copy of your will with the exact gifts you've been making, and sign that and keep on your records.
So I think what you're referring to is the idea of gifting whilst you are alive, during that period, to make part of your estate exempt from inheritance tax, because that's been done prior to any point of death. Are you happy to dive a little bit more into the details of exactly how that works and the reasons as to why it avoids inheritance tax?
Yeah, of course. So the idea is, in terms of, as we've spoken about, everyone's got this nil rate band or this tax allowance on death. So the strategy would be to get as much outside of your estate by the time you are, you're not planning to die, but by the time you reach a certain age. So gifting is always a popular strategy. In terms of allowances, every individual has a sort of gifting allowance of £3,000 per tax year in which they can gift, and that will sit outside their estate. There's other strategies in terms of gifting, such as gifting out of surplus income. If you've got a lot of income and gifting some of that away won't affect your lifestyle, you can do that. Other gifts you may need to just be a bit careful with, such as gifting of properties or any assets, because that may attract capital gains tax as well as inheritance tax. And then the rule is, if you gift something to someone and you survive 7 years from that date, then it will fully sit outside your estate from inheritance tax. If you sadly pass away within that 7 years, then essentially there's a pro rata calculation in which it could pull back some of the value of that asset into tax.
Got it. So if someone's thinking, oh, I'm too old to start this whole gifting thing, you'll say to them, well, you are still going to get some kind of tax incentive from doing it. You might not get the full 0% out of it, but if it's 3.5 years that you're still alive from now, it could be half the rate that you would have had to pay from the start. And I think that's a really important part. A lot of people talk about this concept of trusts and setting up. I've set up a trust for my children so that they don't have to ever pay tax. And I feel like it's more of a catchy word than something that people truly understand. So what is a trust and how does it work?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of those things that you often hear on social media, and people are now thinking that they can just set up trusts. But there's a plethora of taxes when it comes to tax, not hidden taxes, but taxes that aren't, I guess people aren't readily understanding. Essentially, a trust is like a separate entity, but for an individual, it gives you some elements of control on where the assets what the assets can be done. And essentially, a trust is there to protect the asset, usually within the family bloodline, and from inheritance tax purposes. You will gift the asset to a trust. That won't usually attract capital gains tax. But it will still follow those 7-year rules from an inheritance tax perspective. And then once it's in a trust, there is a lot of taxes to consider. So without spending the next half an hour talking about the different types of taxes, some of the things to bear in mind: the trust itself will be subject to income tax on any income gains. There's something called a 10-year charge within a trust, which essentially equates roughly to around 6% of the value of the asset within trust. And a key point is that whoever sets up the trust is usually called a settlor. They can't benefit from the asset going in. So particularly when we talk about lifetime or gifting within a lifetime, you can't essentially assume you're going to put your business shares in there or your rental properties, but you still need to benefit from there. So the key point is, in terms of trust, is that you're going to need professional advice to explain the mechanics, what can and can't be done. But ultimately, from an asset protection, a bloodline protection, it's a really good tool to have.
Got it. I think my summary that I want people to take away from this is, just because you heard the word trust on social media doesn't mean you found a loophole to avoid any kind of tax whatsoever. It's probably something that's even more complicated and requires even more professional advice. Any final tips or things that people should be aware of in the world of inheritance tax just for now?
Yeah, I mean, for those listening that potentially may have businesses, farmland, family business, that's always a key point when it comes to inheritance tax. Now, the rules are almost certainly changing on that in terms of what's called business property relief from inheritance tax. Usually, if you had a trading business, the shares, the market value of the shares would essentially qualify for 100% inheritance tax relief when you die. Now, essentially, you only get 1 million, the first million, which qualifies for 100% business property relief. Then the remaining essentially will be taxed at 20%. Mm. So a lot of family businesses that are going to be passing on to the next generation will need to assess their plans and just see if anything needs to be pivoted to take into account that additional tax burden which is coming in from inheritance tax perspective.
Yeah, that's a big one. If anyone who's seen the protests from farmers around the country, you might now be understanding what Mitch is referring to. Anyway, Mitch, thank you so much for your time. And I think at Mitch the Tax Man on socials is the place to find you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Well, there we go. I think we've just about covered everything in the world of tax today. So either I've put you to sleep, or you are the smartest person in the world right now alongside me. You're welcome, because if you're listening, you're not asleep. Do you see what I've done there? Anyway, on to some reader questions. I say reader questions, audience questions. It's time you guys send us DMs on @thatmoneyshow on Instagram. That's our handle. And quite simply, we answer them live on air. And Irina, you were first in this week asking me, how does a state pension work compared to a private one? Do I / should I have both? So here's a quick summary of a personal pension versus the state pension. The state pension is paid to anyone with enough kind of national insurance contributions over a certain amount of time. That's how you become eligible for it. And the amount you get depends on how many years of qualifying national insurance contributions you've had. And then you get a certain amount. At the moment, I believe it's somewhere between £11,000 and £12,000 a year from the state. Personal pensions is all about money that you've contributed throughout your life. So you need to contribute through either being self-employed, you do figure it out and do it yourself, or through your employer. A lot of them have match schemes, so you put down 5%, they'll add an additional 3%. There's various different things like that. And that's your personal pension, and then that gets paid out to you at the end on top of it. Most people do require both, because to live just purely off the government pension, or the state pension as you've called it, isn't enough. And I would highly recommend you look more into it and think more about your pension, regardless if you are 60 or 20 years old. It's never too early to start. Paul, what have you got for us? You have asked me, people sometimes describe the property market as being a bubble. What does it mean, and what is the effect on both homeowners and renters should this bubble burst? So a housing bubble is, the specific definition is, a sustained but temporary condition of overvalued prices and rampant speculation in the housing market. So a lot of you might have heard of the 2008 financial crash. A lot of this happened around there. And there was also a major housing bubble in the US in the 2000s. And essentially, this was caused by people finding it really easy to borrow money for houses. There was no regulation around it. And this was bound to be tightened up very, very soon. Everyone could buy a house. Lots of demand. House prices shot up. It was a bubble because it was temporary. Remember, bubbles are temporary in life. You can pop them. Anyone can pop a bubble. I'm talking about actual bubbles here, not just housing bubbles. So that's how the housing bubbles work. And normally, this will cause, if it does, when it does burst, a plummet in the price of house prices. And sometimes it could cause homeowners who have had access to buying the property to go into negative equity. And theoretically, it should push down the price of renting as well, because house prices drop in value, therefore rent drops in value. So there we go. Two questions in. I'm sorry, Jodie, you did ask a question. I'll try and get around to it next week, I promise. Anyway, thank you so much for everyone that has listened to the show. That's all we've got time for. Thank you to Mitch the Taxman and Janet for all of their tax advice and self-assessment things. Get your self-assessment done, people. You've literally got 4 days. Get on it. Find a good lawyer. I said lawyer. Find a good accountant. I mean, you can get a good lawyer as well. Remember, you can download the FUBAR Radio app if you want to listen to us live every single week. You can find us at That Money Show on Instagram, or you can DM us with your questions. You can listen back to us on every podcasting platform. I listen on Spotify, but you do you. And lastly, as promised at the start of the show, I've been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And 1 hour later, you are better with your money. See you next week.
FUBAR Radio.